SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
The house from home, from what was my office before I left to go on the road. I'll explain that in a minute. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevepick.com. Came home and got home very late last night and had a good trip back and all that. But the Tina, she decided she was gonna do some office overhaul and clean it, I mean, whatever. It's like somebody moved the furniture. I came home and when you're constantly printing stuff out and you've got PPs and you've got sale catalogs and you name it, the stuff piles up, be honest. So I appreciate the effort, but it's as you sort of get used to reaching for things in certain places, and I can't switch it all back, I think, while she's at school today. But I'm a little nothing is where I left it, basically. It's more, I guess it's more orderly. It's, I do appreciate the effort, what went into it. And she put a small little area, nice oriental rug that was displaced, put it underneath. And that's great, actually, because that it actually, I can tell already, it's good for the sound quality here in the office. But I guess it'll be good in the long run, because I'll have to go through the piles that she basically took anything that was on the ground. And I mean, who of us, still there's so many of us that are loyal, keepers of programs and DRFs and any kind of racing related materials, sheets. If you're a sheet player, you keep the big days. I three hole punch and I'll put stuff, particularly Triple Crown season and Breeders' Cup. And I've got those. The funny thing is, I don't, you go back to them just enough to warrant keeping them, right? But I've got, at the end of each year, I'll go through everything I've kept, and that includes news, and I'll put what I consider important news, and it's all categorized to some degree, industry related and breeding, sale related, horse health, just the different topics that we're constantly discussing, so. I've got several, I've got 15 years worth. So some of it might, I think it's a message, right, from Tina to go through and purge as much as possible. So I guess I will. If she could go to that effort, I can do part two, right? And get rid of anything extra that really that there's no need to keep. At Procter & Gamble, they taught us the system was to only touch paper once. Get the message from it and get rid of it, or file it if it had to be filed. But to only touch it once. And I try to apply that to email, but it's impossible. Stuff comes in, you say, oh, I'll get back to that. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, it's 1,200 emails under the stack. It's the old, you know, last in, first out philosophy. I'm giving you all the corporate lessons. As I mentioned yesterday, a great way to either end the year with the trip or to start the new one, a little bit of both, but really fun yesterday. And that included Johnny and John White and Neil Drysdale. And I was really pleased to be able to have Neil live and have him, you know, honor Mr. Herensberger and his memory. But Drysdale, an all-time great. And there were other, boy, there were horses. It's funny, speaking of going through files, as I was traveling back yesterday, there were a couple of horses that I had made notes of, and I mentioned at the time of Herensberger last week when the news had come that Herensberger had passed. And really a tragedy, because there was no need for him. He got the details, and it's really a sad situation. He broke his shoulder and went to the hospital, and then contracted a viral infection. I mean, it's terrible. There was no need for it. But Artiste Royal was one that, you know, we had mentioned and came to mind. It's not always the stars, right? It's not like we discussed with Bill Perry's passing. Buffalo Dan, that's not the horse that he's most known for when you train Formal Gold and Northeast Bound. But sometimes it's the, you know, it's the second tier stars that stick with you, you know, for whatever reason, whether you bet them or, you know, you saw them break their maiden. We talk about this, the way horses become favorites, and everybody has favorites that if you were asked in a group setting, you know, your favorite horse of all time, or it doesn't always have to be a classic winner or a Breeders' Cup winner or, you know, multiple grade one. It can be, you know, like I discussed with Mark Reed, Mr. Nickerson. I mean, there's all kinds. There's all kinds of favorite horses that people tie on to. It's one of the charms of the game. And certainly the time spent in California and Arizona, that missed it last year, that trip. So being able to go again, third time in 4 years, I really, really enjoyed. Gives you a little, after Breeders' Cup, notably, you start to, and when you're following everything all year long, it begins to, you know, you begin to let down a little bit. So this is a good little chirp, you know, to go on with it into the holiday season. And that's where we're headed. So another few days here this week and next week, and we'll start to have those conversations you have at year end. We've been touching on the horse of the year discussion that continues. I should have actually brought that up with Baffert. We actually got a number of things in with him yesterday. He just was kind of sitting back and and reacting and just talking, and which is fun. Another benefit of being on site and, you know, not having I basically had carved out that last half hour, expecting it ended up being a little bit more than that. So, you know, but fun to let Baffert just riff on let him free associate. You throw out names and where things are headed. One thing that is certainly notable, the way in which he's crafted an approach with the 2 3-year-olds, the 2 and 3 from this point forward, where he knows where ultimately they're going to go when it comes to classic season, but he just reacts. And obviously he's got the luxury of that with the kind of stock that he's got. But it's a complete, in a lot of ways, it's very different from, it's a pretty complete departure from the way most horsemen are approaching their classic candidates. Where, this is where we're going to go. We're going to go to the Tampa, and we're going to. And he's not doing that anymore. I mean, he justified the perfect example. Where he thought he was going to send him on the road and keep McKenzie at home, but then McKenzie gets hurt. And that chess piece and making those, those on-the-fly decisions. And it's really pretty unique to Baffert. On the Triple Crown Trail. So, one of the horses that we're going to discuss today, Jane Lyon is going to join us. We're going to get that visit in with her this morning, hour two. And I'm looking forward to it. As I was going back through her broodmare band, not only is Baffert training McKenzie and Game Winner and chasing yesterday, Magic on Tap is another horse that she bred. Unbelievable. And I want to talk to her about her, she's made some very high-profile purchases to the broodmare and additions to the broodmare band. It over and above Little Princess Emma. But there's also the homebreds that she and her late husband Frank crafted. That included the Dam of Moonshine Memories, Unenchanted Evening. That was a Summer Wind homebred, and then they produced Moonshine Memories, and there's quite a few second generation now that the Jane Lyon is breeding. But her plan is obvious that it's kind of coming to full bloom right about now with all these recent stars and Grade One winners. So we're going to talk about her approach and who's been working with her over the years. She and her husband started in the mid-90s. So, 22, 23 years maybe. We'll get some insights. Marcus Hirsch, after this first break. Marcus is still in Hong Kong, or back to Hong Kong. He went to the training center that the Hong Kong Jockey Club built yesterday, so he's still touring around. I didn't realize until I reached out for him yesterday that Marcus was still gallivanting. So we'll talk to him next, and we'll get the live in-person Hong Kong International Race recap and find out what else Marcus has been seeing and doing. That training center trip, that must have been interesting. So we'll start off with Marcus Hirsch, Jane Lyon, much more back home at the races. Sirius XM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Charlie, I'm pregnant, living on 9th Street. Right above a dirty bookstore of Euclid Avenue. I stopped taking dope, I quit drinking whiskey. My old man plays the trombone, works out at the track.
We're back, and Marcus Hirsch, not back yet from his Hong Kong trip. In fact, enjoying a little added bonus time and a little touring. Marcus, good morning, or good evening there.
Yeah, good evening, very much so. Good morning, too. How you doing, Steve?
Excellent, excellent. And it was, you know, I was in California, and I tried to get up to be able to watch the four races, and I missed them live. I ended up seeing the Highland Real Handicap, though, and then I caught up.
They tried to wait for you, but you just weren't answering, so they just ran them.
It was pretty funny. But your recaps, they were great.
Oh, thank you. And it's just that's really what the issue is that unless the you know, there's some alteration in the relative positions on the globe, it's just always going to be tough. You know, with live consumption of the races here back at home, it's just the timing is pretty rough. Obviously,
how many of these have you visited for?
This is my third year here, and feel pretty, comfortable with the rhythm of the place and the event. And I mean, the local product is dense and complex, and I don't have enough. I don't have time to focus on it the way you'd have to get, fully apprised of all the permutations, because there's a lot to take in with the whole horse population here. But I mean, that being said, I've learned a lot in 3 years, and know enough to write a recap. And you don't have to be an expert to appreciate kind of the star of the show on Sunday, which was Beauty Generation, the horse that won the Hong Kong Mile in a pretty extraordinary fashion.
Well, and in fact, you did have the repeat win when it came to the sprint, Mr. Stunning. One of the big stories, and Alan Carrasso did the preview on Friday of the mm-hmm. card, and the fact that Hong Kong horses swept the four, that was a bit of an overwrap too, because usually an invader or two, Australasia, the Japanese will win a race, but this was a big night for the locals, and yet two of the stars, Marcus, Hot King Prawn and Pakistan Star, faltered a little bit.
Yeah, the race least likely to be won by a Hong Kong-based horse historically on the international card would be the Vase or the Vase, however you... We had this big conversation about that pronunciation a year ago. All of a sudden I recall that. Anyway, that's a mile and a half, and they don't have mile and a half races very often. Here in Hong Kong, it's, usually it's 1,200 to 1,800, which in three quarters to a mile and an eighth, with the occasional mile and a quarter. But that was the winner of that race was a horse which, I mean, I thought the horse ran easily the best race of his life since Glorious Forever. And interestingly, he's a full brother to Time Warp. I'm thinking about the Hong Kong Cup of I've gotten too little sleep the last couple of days. It was Exultant that won the Vase early in the card, turning away Lee's Grassu, the Japanese mare who headed him at the furlong pole or so. Exultant was it. He was a worthy winner. He had, as I mentioned about the lack of mile and a half racing, he only had a couple of tries at the distance. He went through the 4-year-old classic series. Four-year-old championship series last year, and improved with distance. That goes a mile, mile and a half, mile and a quarter. His best race set the mile and a quarter. That was a deep field, but no Highland Reels showed up, and that was kind of, I thought, this theme throughout the four races, that there were good solid participants and they had good international showings, but Not a ton of superstars. There was really only one on the day, and that was the local horse, the Miler.
Stick with the Vase for a moment, because you did have Breeders' Cup participants and Azira, who had her hands full in terms of a wide draw in the Breeders' Cup, Waldgeist in there as well. And so it gave it, it gave it some familiarity and some continuity to those that were tuned in for Breeders' Cup.
Well, yeah, Azira ran a pretty good race in the Vase to get third. She was never a threat to win. She just kind of ran steadily, but she did run better probably here than she did in Louisville in the Filly and Mare Turf. And Waldgeist, he was victimized by a pretty terrible trip, and was fouled badly enough that the jockey was deemed responsible for that episode at the quarter pole when Buick was handed a massive six-week ban by the Hong Kong stewards. I believe it's 12 race meetings, so because they only run 2 a week here, that's spread out over a good portion of the winter. He has since appealed that. I thought the penalty was pretty harsh. But, I mean, I don't know that Waldgeist was going anywhere, really. Well, it's hard to say. He did. He got too far back, and then he got in a lot of trouble, and then he got fouled badly. But I mean, you know, I don't think we really got to see what he might have done. But I didn't know that he was taking his jockey anywhere at any point in the race that was going to get him into, you know, beyond like fourth or fifth. And another European horse in that race, Mirage Danger from Michael Stout, who was going to need to run the best race of his life, but I thought was maybe capable of doing that. He suffered from an atrial fibrillation during the race, which is just an irregular heartbeat, but that he didn't run at all. He was clearly compromised by that condition, which apparently was already resolving itself a few hours after the race, but it did keep him from performing up to standard.
Well, a couple of the names, and obviously Pakistan Star is a horse that...
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about him. He was flat in the race. I think he's more of a mile and a quarter horse, and I also think that, I mean, this is a horse a lot of... I mean, I think of the Americans who follow the circuit here at all, he's probably the horse that you're most likely to have heard of, and he applied in a Silky Sullivan kind of style to great effect periodically, and then, you know, was notorious because he was stopping during his races. Those were races that were starting like 1800 meter races where he got to a certain spot on the backstretch and he just pulled himself up for the most part. But the problem with him, I thought this year, and I think his performance bore it out, is he's just not in the same kind of form that he was at his very peak. Later during the 2017-2018 Hong Kong season, he just turned in kind of a flat performance. I don't know what they're going to need to do to get him back on track. I don't know if we're going to see the very best of him again anytime this season, but we didn't on Sunday.
The sprint race, and this was the other major local disappointment because whenever, you know, we have our regular visits and talk Hong Kong racing the last 3 years, and the star in here, and I think as low a price really as there was, you know, all night,
yeah.
Hot King Prawn, and he really stunk it up. I mean, and without excuse either, Marcus.
Well, you know how shellfish can get when they're overdone. A little smelly, but I was surprised they ran as poorly as he did. I wasn't surprised he got beat. He'd won 9 of 10 races, but there was always the sense, you know, he had totally proved it at the highest level. He had been thought to be maybe better going a straight 1,000 meters, 5 furlongs, but showed that he could handle the 6 furlongs or 1,200 around the bend in his last couple of starts. But he had been getting weight because he was running in handicaps and lacked the Group One success that horses like the Mr. Stunning, who repeated in the sprint, had. And you know, his stablemate, bull trained by John Sizeye Victory, he lapped on him pretty early in the race. They didn't go that fast. I thought that Hot King Prawn would have been able to survive that sort of tempo if he had performed close to to his mark. But he gave way pretty tamely. And I mean, Mr. Stunning was a worthy winner for sure. It was one of two on the night for a local Hong Kong trainer named Frankie Lohr, who was, I think his father was a stable hand here, and he went through the jockey's training school, had a fairly undistinguished career as a jockey, switched to training, went through that process, which is lengthy and demanding here by the strictures imposed by the Hong Kong Jockey Club. He was assistant to the two, you know, most successful trainers right now, in Hong Kong, John Size and John Moore, when I was actually in the other order. He went on his own last season, and you know, the owner switched Mr. Stunning from John Size, who was, you know, generally regarded as just a masterful trainer, to Lore, but you know, it worked. He got the win, and not only that, you know, he got two wins on the card, his first two Group 1 wins, and was a major contributor to the local sweep. But the second and third in that race were both Size trained horses. CV Penn, who had a right to need a second race, it was only the second race of the season. He'd been off a really long time, and Beat the Clock, another Size horse ridden by Ryan Moore. He's probably more of a 6.5 for a long horse, and just couldn't with the with the winner, but they both ran creditably. DB Penn had been scheduled to go to Dubai last year before he got hurt, so we'll see if he winds up making that trip. And then the big question now is, will the owners of Beauty Generation, who, you know, has turned into an absolute star, his trainer John Moore wants to run him in the Dubai turf, take him abroad, see if he can reproduce his spectacular local form on a different circuit, and you know, if the owners agree to it, then that will be the plan. I know I think they were actually maybe meeting tonight as kind of a first phase of hashing out the details of that.
You mentioned DB Penn and the New Zealand bred horse that I kind of came to have some affection for the last couple of years, and mm-hmm. nice price actually in there to end up second.
So 13-1 or something.
Yeah. Yep, John Size, and yeah, and as you mentioned, well, Size sent four, I think. Yeah, Size sent four.
He did. He had iVictory and Hot King Prawn as well.
Right. Sir Dancelot showed up in there too. Speaking of American,
well, I mean, he showed up in
in name only.
He showed up in the starting gate. Yeah, he didn't show much in the race. He's beaten a fair distance, and you know, I mean, of course, there were no American horses here. excuse me. There was an American-owned horse for in Gretchen Jackson Leo Stable, had one master who
right.
got too far behind in the mile and wound up eighth, and she didn't run as well, I don't think, as she did in the mile. But we sent zero horses here this year, which is a little bit disappointing, but. It's just always going to kind of be an issue falling as close as just to the Breeders' Cup at the end of the year. And it's a long trip. You know, American horses haven't had a ton of success, I think, as exemplified by Stormy Liberal, who was, I believe, 11th in the sprint last year, and then obviously, you know, had a great year turf sprinting in Dubai and America subsequently, and just didn't come close to reproducing that form. It takes a certain horse, and I think you would have to really kind of focus on coming here at the expense of the Breeders' Cup, maybe, or like just take it easy earlier in the year and do two in a row with a fresh horse as something you'd planned months before. But and with a horse, you know, medication-free racing here, you need to bring a horse who can run without Lasix, and you know, It's a very particular style of racing, and I just think that the horses that are based here and settle in and end up, you know, being really comfortable with the routines that are in place in Hong Kong, and Beauty Generation is a, you know, just a top example of this. They end up having a big advantage regardless of what their form was, you know, in their previous career before they came here.
One of the other, I suppose, nuances to the trips. You think about what the experience that Pavel had a couple of weeks back in Japan when making the.
Do I have to?
No, you don't have to. But one of the weird things was, you know, basically the horse being saddled and then being paraded for 40 minutes, and I mean it. It basically boiled over, and by the time they finally decide, okay, let's go run this race, and just, you know, there's some things that are curveballs. Peter Miller said too that it's something that, you know, you better you might you might be told what's going to happen, but until you go do it, it's a different experience. And so, I'll give you an example, Marcus. Michael McCarthy on Saturday, basically, they did something. They had to bring the filly over, Vibrance, and she had never done what they did on Saturday, and she was fretting. Pretty much from the time apparently that they left Santa Anita, put her on the van, drove her to Los Al in the morning, and then she's in a holding stall, and she was uncomfortable and left her race somewhere else. And so it kind of speaks to the challenge, you know, that not every horse can, an outfit can, you know, pull these kinds of, you know, maneuvers off.
I think Vibrance was just clamoring to have gone to Louisiana Champions Day and run in the last there.
We talked to Dallas yesterday, actually.
Oh, you did? Yeah, he had two good winners on the card, and the 2-year-old classy John. I don't know how far he wants to run, but he's obviously far above par for a Louisiana bred 2-year-old at this point, and he's done a good job with Give Me a Minute too, who won the sprint race. So I mean, Dallas has had a fabulous year. You know, great job by him. He had a really good third for me, and it's pleasing to see him have such a strong season.
It's the reason. It's funny that you're acknowledging that too, because I reached out to him yesterday for that reason, because it's now his second best year in terms of earnings, and he's only had one graded stake win. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah. You know, they retired. God, I'm gonna mix that names up. No matter what I say, it's going to be wrong. Forever Unbridled? Unbridled Forever?
No, Forever Unbridled.
Which one?
Forever.
Yeah, Forever Unbridled. I know, I'm just kidding. But you know, she was retired early in the year, and that was kind of the stable star. Seeking the Soul, excuse me. He had a solid year, right? And we'll see how he does in the Pegasus, but Dallas ended up, he hasn't, I don't know how many training titles he's won, because he doesn't usually have enough bullets to contend, but he definitely made the most of them, and you know, did decently at Saratoga with his ring up there, and it was a great year for him.
Yeah, he's got some bullets to fire too. He's got a nice set of maiden winners that will be running back, and he's absolutely on the march. Let's round out the conversation about the four Hong Kong International races, talking about Beauty Generation and the impressive performance there in the mile. Vive Los, a horse North American audiences are familiar with. And then the capper of the sequence. And Glorious Forever, you mentioned being the full brother of Time Warp, basically just D'Souza takes control early and let him on a merry chase.
If you want to know how much better he ran than he ever had before, his rating here I saw today was raised by 15 points, which is a pretty astronomical jump. I mean, he had never come close to doing anything like winning a Group 1 race, and it was a good race by that horse, who I guess is improving, but it was a very, very down year for the Hong Kong Cup, and it was a little surprising that Time Warp didn't go on with it. He's such a need-the-lead type. And they weren't actually going fast. And the horse that was really disadvantaged by that and then ended up getting stuck in behind a horse that wasn't really taking her anywhere, you know, at the top of the long home stretch, was the Japanese filly Deirdre, who was a good finishing second, very disadvantaged by the pace. And I thought she ran as well as the winner. She will be going to Dubai to the Dubai Turf is the plan with her. And you mentioned Vive Los, the former winner of the Dubai Turf. She is scheduled to be retired, although I'm not sure that's 100% certain yet, but that has been the intention so far with her.
Well, this is always an interesting sequence. And as you mentioned, the Dubai Winter Carnival, target for
around the corner.
Yeah, it really is. And the first of the year, Marcus, the for everybody's appreciation, talk about going there again and the atmosphere and the kind of the kind of event that the HKIR has become. And I know that obviously Pat Cummings and his time at with the Jockey Club, and he tried to gain some attention from an American audience, and it seems like that's been a fruitful endeavor.
Well, listen, again, we started our conversation talking about just the time difference. It's the biggest problem of all. If not for that, I could see this product really catching on. I mean, this is the biggest card of the year, but they do have plenty of other, high-level stakes action. Where this particular event falls in the calendar is a little bit difficult for getting the kind of horses I know they'd love to have, just because it's at the end of the year. I mean, the European horses are getting breaks for the most part. The American horses have run in the Breeders' Cup and are getting breaks, or the best dirt horses are readying for the Pegasus. So there are certain constraints on the top horses that they're going to be able to get for these races. That being said, they still had 24 international shippers for the four races here, and the Japanese are obviously always big participants. It's closer to them. And also, there's been travel's been restricted from Australia since October 2017 because of horse sickness fears. And I have been given to understand through some stuff that Jockey Club officials said in the last couple of days that they're very hopeful that is nearing a resolution. One executive said that by this time next year, he's almost certain that Australians will be able to come here and then return home without having to do a huge quarantine. And there is even hope that situation could be resolved by the end of this Hong Kong season or for the bigger races in the spring. No guarantees there, but that's going to help the profile of the HKR races in future seasons as well, because those are more ready participants than the Europeans and obviously the Americans too. But it's just if you have a look at the product here, the information that's available is top of the line. It's a top-down, administration and jurisdiction, something the likes of which we can't have at all because of the way things are set up in the States. And it's kind of a dream of how things would work with, the cataloging of information, a super extensive database where everything that all the horses do is immediately recorded and available to bettors, and the transparency is off the charts. It's medication-free racing on race day. And, obviously there are always going to be flaws here and there, and we'll never have a complete ideal. But as far as any place around the world, I don't imagine that anyone gets it more right than they do here.
Well, and obviously a unique circumstance, too, the way they basically administer the whole, all the horses, and it is fascinating, and it's almost like a test tube. And I hear all the time, in fact, just came from the symposium last week, well, we should do things more like Hong Kong. It's like, well, wait, okay, that's a nice pie-eyed concept. It's like when people say, American racing should emulate Keeneland. Well, okay, so you're saying every jurisdiction should open a sales company that can augment the racing product and that they race for 16 and 17 days twice a year? There's certain practicalities.
Well, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It realistically, it can't be like here, but I actually think it's fine to say we should do things more like Hong Kong. We can't be that because, as you obviously know, and we're just pulling out, it's just not, things are not set up that way in any direction, regulatory-wise, or the way that racing jurisdictions are separated. That being said, if people held this up as an ideal and strove to have the same sort of transparency, the same sort of information available,
sure,
the same sort of respect for their customers and bettors, and said, let's do as much as we can to make it like that, it would be a wonderful thing for American racing.
No doubt. I want you to also tell us about the training center, which was under construction when Pat was getting ready to leave, and it sounds tremendous. It's cool that you had a chance to travel to go see it.
Chongfa.
Yeah.
I did have that chance to go see it, and I want to make it clear that it was a sightseeing trip, and I was there as a tourist. But it is in mainland China. That was interesting. I'd never been to China before. I don't know exactly how many miles. It's for the horses. It's about a four-hour trip. And let's see, there are 150 horses there now. They're prize trainer. They have nine trainers with horses there. Their prize trainer is John Size, who has a considerable string there. Just last Wednesday at the Happy Valley card before the HKI, I believe he had five runners that came from Chongfa and two wins, 2 seconds. And moreover, those horses he sends back there, a couple days after they race. So his string there is kind of just self-contained. They have gone to pretty immense lengths to set up a biosecurity zone between Hong Kong and China, which is another necessity if you're going to cross the border all the time with livestock. Anything that goes into Chongfa, which has like three different gates, I'm sorry, it has four gates, I believe, until you get into the stables, with everything has to be totally sanitized. The workers change out of their uniforms when they go in and out of the facility. They can, they are very careful with umbrellas for rain and muck buckets. Everything that might come in and out, there's the greatest effort made to keep it sanitary. They've got these huge fences with barbed wire on top to make sure that animals in the countryside, because it's up in the mountains, it's a beautiful area with super clean air, a great place for horses. So that's one big thing that's a major focus, is keeping it biosecure, so that they can have a free flow of traffic between here and there, which they're doing right now. Part of the thing is there's such a premium on space in Hong Kong. It's a hugely densely populated area. And, they have 25 turnout paddocks up there, and I'm like, really, there was no place you could have put those here in Hong Kong? And people are literally like, no. there's not even room for that. It's set up to house considerably more horses than that. They're going to start increasing the population. I think things are really ramping up. There are plans to have exhibition races there in the spring, in March, I believe. That race planning is underway. Obviously, there'll be no gambling. There's no gambling in China, and nobody sees that coming anytime very soon. But one thing that people do see coming is a renovation of the Sha Tin stables, at least. Those are small and haven't been updated in 40 years or so. And in order to do a major project at Sha Tin, they have to have a place to put the horses that are going to be displaced by the construction. And so the hope is that a significant number of them can reside there during that period, which would really help move that whole project forward and advance the state of things here. But it's great facilities. They've done top-class work. Those stables are beautiful. They have big wide corridors, high ceilings. It is essentially just a training center. If you've been to one, you've been to a lot of them. But they have, the turf gallops are pristine. They've got, multiple dirt tracks, an uphill gallop, starting gate, so on and so forth. They've got the little grandstand, stewards facilities, jockeys' quarters, a paramedic station. They've got a veterinary clinic there, a swimming area. They got everything that you would need to train a horse and have some kind of racing there. Where that goes over time remains to be seen, but they spent a lot of money and done a lot of work, and they've gotten it off the ground.
How much longer are you spending? When do you head back?
I've actually decided to just stay at this point. No, I've been here. I got in last Monday, so it has been quite some time. But I am, God willing, headed home tomorrow morning and be back at O'Hare Airport around noon.
Well, I was at Midway about 12 hours ago, give or take, on the way back from California.
Cool.
And on the Chicago front, I didn't want to miss the opportunity with you to you pointed out that Mike Revis got his 2,000th winner, and it's really got to be acknowledged because he's done it, you know, the hard way. I mean, real meat and potatoes kinds of a career with just consistent wins.
Right, and I think that's a fair way of putting it. And he's not, although he's been around for a long time, he's never had a huge stable. So,
right.
Excuse me. His win percentage is solid. I remember when I first got involved in the Chicago circuit, which was roughly, 250 years ago. It may just seem like that. It was more like 19 years ago. I called him and I said, "Hello, who I am." And he said, "Hi," and then he immediately started, he launched into a tirade about claiming jail, which had just been changed. Wow, this guy is pretty tough. He's on it. But that's kind of the way he was. I mean, I've heard people say that, they talk to him and they come away thinking they don't, I mean, he has a lot to say, he has a lot of opinions. He's always playing an angle of some sort, and these are the things that make a good claiming trainer. And don't get me wrong, he's had success with other types of horses when they've come his way, but claiming has been his bread and butter all along, and he managed to he's managed to do really well with it. I mean, obviously, with the diminishment in purses there and Mike's getting older, he's pulled back, but even now he's still winning races at Hawthorne. And he had a lot of really, really strong years in Chicago, and we're a milestone-obsessed culture in a lot of ways, and some of them, fair play to the participants. They seem a little forced, but I'm glad you brought this one up because it was worth mentioning.
Well, he's won, 50 to 75 races a year for, 30-plus years. It's a real testimony to the way in which, people approach this, and it's a little, you can be anonymous or somewhat anonymous nationally, and he's only had a handful of graded stake type winners, but
scarce Danny,
it's,
that doesn't mean he can't train a horse.
No, exactly, and especially in many ways, it's one thing to get stake stock and convert with them. It's another thing to take somebody else's retread and see something in them and have success with them and patch them up and get more out of them. And that's what Michael has done for years. And Carlos Marquez, the two of them, are pretty synonymous. Whenever you look at PPs.
Yeah, now they are. Mike has gone through several stable riders. The first one I remember was Juvenal Diaz, and then he used Larry Sterling with great regularity. He's a guy that seems to put his trust. Like, who his A team is, I have to say, during his heyday, I mean, people might look at Chicago now and see one thing, but during Mike's the big run that he had, there were a lot of good outfits and good trainers and sharp claiming trainers up here. It was legitimate racing, and it was a dogfight, and he managed to win a lot of those fights.
Well, Mike Revis now 72 and exactly 2,000 wins.
72, really, yeah.
Well, this game keep you young when you're up at 4 a.m. every day. And
it will either keep you young or make you old. I'm not sure. One of the two.
Or simultaneously do both. Marcus, looking forward to later in the winter, and we probably won't talk before the year turns. So thanks for everything all year long. Merry Christmas and happy, healthy.
You're welcome.
And safe trip back.
And happy holidays to you. Thank you.
I appreciate it. And we're looking forward. I see LeCompte advances now and some intendeds and possibles and probables. So we're ready to turn our attention to fairgrounds.
All right. Sounds good, Steve.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch. And he's got that long trip home from Hong Kong. And obviously, that's nice to spend 9 days and get a chance to, you know, really take advantage, given how long the trip is. And then Marcus will gear up for March and Dubai. He and Steve Anderson with the international coverage for the Daily Racing Forum. Just a minute or two to the top of the hour. Jane Lyon's going to join us. Looking forward to this visit. And I've wanted to talk to her for even before chasing yesterday's win on Saturday, and got to spend some time with her there, and she was, boy, a bundle of nerves. And it's interesting because her interest in the racing side of things has kind of bubbled to the surface only fairly recently. She really had been operating as a commercial entity for an extended period, and then got more interested in, you know, keeping some of the fillies. Of course, that's part of the process. You know, you heard that. In fact, that's a conversation Casey and I working on the best of for vacation period, and we're definitely going to run the Watts Humphrey discussion again. And, you know, Humphrey talks about, you know, his broodmare band and how he maintains it, and, you know, the whole concept of keeping, you know, keeping fillies and, you know, expecting to, you know, campaign them and try to get black type for them the way Chasing Yesterday got it on Saturday. But the flip side of selling the colts, and here's a perfect, you know, the perfect storm on that, where you've on Saturday you had Chasing Yesterday, she being kept by Jane Lyon, and Improbable that Humphrey bred with St. George, and they sold. And just two, you know, I didn't ask Baffert about that, but just $200,000 for Improbable, you know, which is kind of wheelhouse, you know, kind of a wheelhouse number, right? 150 to, you know, to 250, that sort of second tier. What a terrific purchase, and that just shows you the counterbalance, you know, the commercial side and the maintaining of a broodmare band. Jane Lyon joins us from Arkansas. After this, at the races, hour two, back after this. Thanks to Marcus.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names. But the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people. 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas. For the refugee.
visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of HIAS.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.